You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Our breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. till 8:30 a.m.
Only double. Clap your hands.
Hello. Good morning.
Well, I think it's both me and Elena's first trip back after the summer, so it's exciting to be back. I know that a lot of us have had a very big summer.
Yeah, it's been a very busy start to the year so far. I think one of my highlights so far was going to the gathering for Gaza a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if either of you were there.
No, I wasn't able to go, but yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, it was amazing. You got there and because it's sort of like an indoor-outdoor venue, which is fun. So there was like tons of people at the front at the food trucks and then, venue inside where the music was so good. And we had friend of 3CR, Miss Kanina, was playing. She was amazing. I'd never seen her live.
So many great artists. Yeah. Like Yara, Julia Jacqueline, yeah. Angie McMahon.
Yeah, and then Genesis Owusu was really good at the end.
Oh, that would have been incredible.
Yeah, yeah. A friend of a friend once made his grills, so that's my one connection to him. But, yeah, he was really fun. So I really enjoyed that. It was a great day.
Yeah, yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can chat about what is coming up on today's show. It's great to have more people back. I would highly recommend that if you haven't already, tune into last week's show because we did replay a lot of interviews that we had with First Nations guests in 2025 and also some really powerful speeches from Invasion Day in Naam. But we are going to start off with a speech from the Invasion Day rally in Geelong, which was organised by Be True Cry Justice Geelong. We'll be hearing from Lena Hokianga Puaka, who was born and raised in Ngati Kahungunu, the third largest tribe on the east coast of the North Island of Aotearoa. And in her speech, it was super staunch. And as a Māori, she sort of talked about the similarities between the struggles between Indigenous peoples over there and here, as well as just standing in solidarity with Indigenous voices across the world. At 7:30, we'll be joined by Lucinda Thorpe, who's a regular contributor to 3CR Breakfast. She's privacy campaigner at Digital Rights Watch, and she's going to talk to us about Palantir. Do either of you know much about that tech company?
No, right. I think I've heard of them, but
yeah, I feel like you've definitely heard of them, but yeah, there's a lot of scary stuff that's happening with that company. So she's going to break down what they do and their influence across the world.
Yeah, exciting. And then at 7:45, we're going to be speaking to Lisa Palmer, the CEO of Wildlife Wildlife Victoria and a dedicated wildlife rescuer. And yeah, Lisa's going to join us in the studio to chat about the impact of heat waves on native wildlife, including the grey-headed flying foxes. And then at 8 o'clock, we're going to be speaking to Gail Osborne from Wombat Forest Care, who we spoke to last year. And Gail's from a community group that is dedicated to protecting the forests and wildlife of the aptly named Wombat Forest. And we're going to be, yeah, particularly focusing on, some changes to federal strategic assessments of planned burns and what that's going to mean for threatened species.
And at 8:15, we'll be speaking to Sarah from the Victorian Pill Testing Service about what the service is, where you can find it, and its location at the Victorian Street Pride Party this Sunday.
Awesome. So that is our show for today. So stay tuned to 3CR 855 AM. We'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment.
These are the news headlines for Tuesday, the 3rd of February, 2026. As preparation for the 2026 season begins, local footy clubs have suspended or abandoned initiatives addressing gender-based violence in the face of state government funding cuts. Each year, at the annual All Clubs Conference to be held on February the 7th, staff from the Victorian Amateur Football Association weigh priorities and obligations around serving their communities off the field. One of the programs offered from 2022 to 2024 was run by Relationships Australia Victoria. Designed specifically to work with amateur clubs, the Healthy Clubs Healthy Relationships program offered the 60 VAFA clubs an opportunity to host workshops and conversations around consent, respect, and gender equality. However, only 3 clubs ever signed up for the program, which has now been shut down. When the Victorian state budget was released in May 2025, the Preventing Violence Through Sport funding was quietly cut after 3 years. The grant had handed out a total of $2.76 million to 12 different programs across Victorian sport. The Office for Women in Sport and Recreation was also defunded and shut down, provoking a petition by Women's Sport Australia describing the cuts as disastrous and stating that they threatened progress made towards safer, more inclusive sporting spaces. Also in the news, a project with Charles Darwin University, Groot Aqua Aboriginal Corporation, and the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization strives to expand GAAC's low-trophic agriculture program by developing production methods for the gold line rabbit fish. The gold line rabbit fish has flexible nutritional requirements, high tolerance to variable water quality, strong grazing capacity for fouling control in ponds, sea cages, and tanks, and is an excellent food fish, making it an ideal species for agriculture production. GAAC is very proud to be partnering with CDU and CSIRO on this important project. We've been working for several years to build a sustainable Indigenous-led aquaculture sector on Groot Island. Our focus has always been on species and production systems that make sense for community needs, local ecosystems, and long-term food security, said the leader of Groot Aqua Aboriginal Corporation's aquaculture program, Dr. Valentine Tapo. The gold line rabbit fish is an ideal fit for that vision. GAAC has already established and maintained broodstock and successfully produced hatchery-bred juveniles, and this project represents the next step, refining hatchery and nursery protocols so productions can scale reliably. This work supports our broader strategy to develop low-traffic, environmentally sustainable agriculture that aligns with Anadigliagua values and strengthens the island's move towards a blue economy.
44 Flats United, oh, in other news, 44 Flats United have released a statement in response to Jacinta Allen's state government's decision to continue its plan to demolish all of Melbourne's 44 public housing high-rise flats. 7 elder buildings have been announced for displacement and destruction as part of the third tranche. 44 Flats United, a community group organising to stop the demolition of Melbourne's public housing towers, have identified the decision as wholesale destruction of public housing in Victoria and representative of a deepening desire by the state to socially cleanse Melbourne's inner suburbs, despite sustained and strong opposition by residents and communities, as well as calls by the parliamentary inquiry to halt all plans.
Finally, in headlines, Gaza's key Rafah border crossing has reopened for limited traffic after almost 2 years of closure, officials have said. The crossing, linking the Palestinian enclave with Egypt, Gaza's only border passage that does not lead to Israel, reopened on Monday. A vital entry point for humanitarian supplies and passage for people awaiting medical evacuation, the crossing's reopening is stipulated under the United States brokered ceasefire that halted the war between Israel and Hamas in October. However, the reopening is limited. Israel and Egypt are expected to impose caps on the number of travellers crossing, and Israel will ensure intensive security checks on Palestinians entering and exiting the Strip. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, 3rd of February, and you're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Creative West is an important project that will improve the Footscray CBD. It will be a welcoming place for the community with a library, performing arts venue and a town park. Tell us what you would like to see and help shape the design. Learn more and share your thoughts by the 1st of March online at yourcityyourvoice.com.au/CW. Maribyrnong City Council is a 3CR supporter.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalisation intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! 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 You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression.
We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. We begin today's program by playing a speech from the Invasion Day rally in Geelang or Geelong, organised by Be True Cry Justice Geelong. Lena Hokianga Puaka was born and raised in Ngati Kahungunu, the third largest tribe on the east coast of the North Island of Aotearoa, New Zealand. Lena is a dedicated advocate for Māori and Indigenous rights, truth and justice. In 2021, she led a hikoi, or protest activation, in support of the Māori wards, ensuring a fair Māori representation in council at the local government level. In 2023, she also led an activation against changes to government policies that significantly impacted Māori. Most recently, in November 2024, Lena spoke at the Action Opposing Changes to the Treaty Principles Bill, a direct breach of cultural identity and rights of Māori. This powerful action began at Camp Sovereignty and ended at the Shrine of Remembrance. As a descendant of her ancestress Hinapare, a strong Māori wahine, or woman, and leader of her time, Lena proudly stands in solidarity with Indigenous voices across the globe. In the following excerpt, she is being introduced by Julie Saylor Briggs, born to Arab Island of Zenidketh, or Torres Strait Islands.
So, I would like to bring up our first speaker, a dead and Māori woman. This is like everybody, Māori woman from country, is going to share us some real truth. Some real wisdom and some justice. Give her a big welcome.
Acknowledgement of my mother tongue back in Aotearoa, New Zealand, who are going through so many breaches, and our treaty that has been in place since 1840. So to come here and celebrate you who have signed a treaty, my words to you is ensure that they uphold it. Because what's happening, 185 years we've had a treaty in place, and our government back in Aotearoa, New Zealand, have been breaching it time and time and time again. Shame! Shame! And here, looking around here, we need to honour what has been set in foundation. I'm going to kick these shoes off because this is your whenua, and I am absolutely privileged to be here as a wahine Māori, a Māori female, and I have whānau here, a beautiful sister here, who we now call our home because of what you are all fighting for. And keep fighting, because we, you, Tāua, we're here to honour your ancestors, my ancestors, and they've put on this glorious day for us. Because we are one spirit. We are one spirit. And for us to be here even though these lands are ancestrally our Māori lands, we still feel you. We still cry for you because you are us, we are you, and we're gonna keep fighting for you. We're gonna stand with you. We have a saying that we stand pukohiwi ki te pukohiwi, which is shoulder to shoulder, not in front, not behind, not above, not below, but side by side. And so I'm here today. Thank you to our sisters. Thank you to all our whānau, our Māori community who are here calling this home, away from home. Please share your voices with our whānau, our First Nations sisters and brothers. Always was, always will be
Aboriginal land.
Tēnā koutou.
You're listening to 3CR, and that was Leina Hokianga Puaka speaking at the Invasion Day rally in Geelong. This rally was organised by Be True Cry Justice Geelong, which is a group of First Nations peoples and non-Indigenous members who share a commitment to the Uluru Statement from the Heart. You can find the group on Facebook and Instagram. And thank you so much to Amy for the recording. We are going to be back with a song after these announcements.
Want stories straight from community, culture, language, music and more, all in one place?
Meet ICTV Play, the free on-demand streaming service from Indigenous Community Television.
Watch news, cooking, music, language programs, cultural shows and heaps more videos made by Mob for Mob, anytime, anywhere.
On your phone, your tablet or your computer, ICTV Play brings our stories to life and keeps us connected, no matter where we are.
Download the app today from your favourite app store or jump online at ictv.com.au/app.
Showing our way.
A 3CR supporter.
I Plus Pride Victoria is a not-for-profit organisation dedicated to equality and justice for multigender attracted people, including bi, pan, regardless of label, or no label at all. We organise community events and advocate for better policies and services. iPlus Pride runs discussion groups which offer a safe and fun space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your sexual identity, and provide peer support. iPlus Pride is especially keen to hear from multi-gender attracted people in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to iPlus Pride are tax deductible. For more information, visit our website at biplusprideVic.org.au, email info@biplusprideVic.org.au, or find us on Facebook or Instagram.
A 3CR supporter.
I'm bisexual.
Stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now. Step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
Cover system is broken. Delays, denials, and profit-driven decisions are hurting real people physically, mentally, and financially. add your support to the Call for Change by the Injured Workers Support Team. Visit the Parliament of Victoria website, find the Legislative Reform for Workers' Compensation System e-petition and add your name. Stand with the IWST and injured workers. Demand a system that is centred on recovery, dignity and safety. Sign the petition today. IWST is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR Breakfast, and before these messages, we heard a speech from Lena Hokianga-Puaka, who spoke at the Geelang Invasion Day rally last week. Right now, we're going to play you a song. This is by Kian, who is a Kuku Yalanji Jirbao Zenad Keth, or Torres Strait Islander songwriter and performer, and this is her song called Heavy. We're just having a few technical issues with playing our songs this morning, so we're going to go to some messages and hopefully we'll be right back.
Did you know that Western Sahara is Africa's last colony? The issue of Western Sahara was raised in the Eddie Mabo case referencing Terra Nullius. Western Sahara is illegally occupied by Morocco. Indigenous Sahrawis are denied their right to self-determination. France continues to veto United Nations human rights observation in Western Sahara. Sahrawi people are being killed by Israeli drones. Like to learn more? Become informed. Become an Australia Western Sahara Association member at awsa.org.au. Australian Western Sahara Association is a 3CR supporter.
Myself.
listening to 3CR, and we did just hear from Kian, but that was actually her song called Better Things. Joining us again this morning is Lucinda Thorpe, privacy campaigner at Digital Rights Watch. Lucinda is back this morning to tell us more about Palantir. Primarily a defence contractor, Palantir Technologies specialises in data integration and surveillance analytics with customers such as the Israeli Occupation Forces and US Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, as well as government and corporate clients in Australia. Welcome back to 3CR, Lucinda.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us on the program today. And I know the topic that we're going to get into today is pretty massive, so we'll see how much we can get through in our interview. But I think, you know, a lot of people have probably heard the name Palantir, but might not actually know much about the tech company itself. So I was wondering if you could give us some background information.
Yeah, absolutely. So Palantir was co-founded by Peter Thiel, who we'll talk about a little later, and Alex Karp. And it was founded in the wake of 9/11, and it was basically the first company that went to government and like corporate clients and said, you have heaps of data, and right now it's all siloed. There's nothing you can do with it. But if you hand that data over to us, we can build a system which makes it searchable and linkable. And this seems innocuous, but because of the work they've done with their clients, they've actually amassed a pretty horrible human rights record. And not just with their military operations and intelligence and law enforcement, but even working with their corporate clients, they've managed to massively violate human rights. For example, when they worked for JP Morgan, they surveilled every employee looking for like disgruntled employees, and they were running surveillance on all of their emails and everything, including the executives. And yet it ended up being found to be illegal, and it was costing over $3,000 a day to run this.
Wow, that's already pretty horrific, what you're telling us now about the impacts that this has on people's privacy. And we'll get to, I guess, what this will mean for people living in Australia who will have to interact with Palantir in some sort of way through their work or otherwise. But you mentioned that this was co-founded by Peter Thiel, and again, people may have heard his name before and the influence he has had on US and world politics. So what else can you tell us about Peter Thiel and his influence worldwide?
Yeah, so Peter Thiel has had significant influence on US politics and, by extension, global politics. So he was one of the first major Silicon Valley figures to openly back Donald Trump in 2016. And this really helped build Donald Trump's credibility within the tech and venture capital circles. He's also mentored and financially supported Republicans such as J.D. Vance. Now, this is problematic because his own beliefs are quite strong and quite awful. So he said that democracy and freedom are not compatible. So having him in the ears of some of the most powerful people on the planet is really unsettling. He also promotes the idea that society should be run by a small group of powerful people who can make decisions quickly and efficiently. So he kind of prefers an authoritarian system of government over a democracy. And I think we're kind of starting to see the repercussions of that in America, having him in the ears of the leaders there.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess when you combine that with what this company is doing in terms of gathering data and surveillance on people, not just in the US but elsewhere, and then combining that with the power and influence that they have, that's pretty scary stuff. So I did want to talk about some of the clients that Palantir has, and I've read a bit about how one of their customers, for example, is the IOF, or the Israeli Occupation Forces. And, you know, we know, of course, what's happening over there at the moment. Genocidal attacks against Palestinians, constant surveillance. So what can you tell us about the the work of Palantir in Palestine?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will preface by saying that Palantir is an incredibly shady and opaque company. So there could be a lot more happening under the surface that we don't know. But what we do know is that Palantir has a partnership with the Australian government and their military. So the Palantir systems gather, organise and analyse information about Palestinians. So, like you said, conducting mass surveillance on Palestinians. They then help the IDF identify locations, individuals and patterns of movement of these Palestinians. And these systems ultimately enable the Israeli government to target quote-unquote terrorists and then bomb them.
Mm.
So Palantir has a big role to play in deciding where these bombs are dropped. So Israel's military campaign in Gaza has involved widespread bombing. Palantir has helped that.
Mm.
And these bombs have resulted in over 70,000 Palestinian deaths, including at least 14,000 children. So this indiscriminate killing of Palestinians, combined with the blocking of aid and food, like you said, amounts to genocide. So Palantir is behind the scenes enabling a genocide and actively profiting immensely from the death of these Palestinians.
Yeah, I think there's so much to there's so much there when you're talking about these huge companies and the role that they play in violence on this level, because I guess it really forces us to think about then their partnerships with other areas as well, including like governmental bodies and also corporate clients. I guess seeing the role that they play in the genocide of Palestinians should really, wake us up and force us to act, because we can see that what's happening there obviously is happening in other places as well, closer to home. We're also seeing a lot of footage coming out of the US as well. What can you tell us about how they work with ICE, and is it, I guess, similar in the way that they are surveilling and tracking Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank?
Yeah, so there are similarities with how they're treating American citizens and how they're treating, well, not just American citizens, I guess everyone in America, and how they're treating Palestinians 100%. So something interesting about Palantir is it's often associated with the Trump regime, but Palantir has worked with ICE since at least 2013, providing data systems used to support large-scale immigration enforcement operations, including workplace raids. Now, things have really ramped up since Trump came into office. So Palantir has received more than $900 million in federal government contracts, and that includes $30 million to develop tools designed to identify and track people for deportation. One of these tools that we know about displays potential deportation targets on a map and generates a profile for each individual. So these profiles can include personal details, and then they also give a confidence score, estimating whether the person is still living at a particular address. Now, it's not publicly known exactly where all of this information comes from, but we do know that Palantir has had access to large volumes of US government data, including data sets from agencies such as Medicaid, and it's helped integrate these massive amounts of data into a central searchable system.
Mm.
So that could be where some of that data is coming from. But Palantir does also draw on commercial data sources, for example, social media data, alongside these government records. In practice, this means the system allows immigration agents to search through a combined government and commercial database to help locate individuals in real time. So it's very dystopian.
Definitely. And it just raises so much questions about, again, what you were saying, where the data comes from, how it's being stored, where we know how it's being used. You've just told us, several ways in which this data is being used. And so, yeah, I guess by extension then, if we've got Palantir working with several bodies in here in Australia, what does that mean for our privacy as well? Unfortunately, we've run out of time for this morning, Lucinda. I had a feeling that this was going to be a huge topic that would maybe span a few interviews, so perhaps we can do part two next week or the week after. But for now, thank you so much for breaking down Palantir for us. I think, like you said, it is an incredibly, it's monolithic, but it's also very opaque. There's a lot of information out there, but also so much that we don't know. And so as a starter, thank you so much for telling us about who they are, who's behind it, their influence in US politics, but also their huge role in the genocide against Palestinians. So, yeah, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Lucinda.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I might have spent 6 months lying on my living room floor. I might have been sick then, well then sick some more. I might be proud of me than I ever have been. I've been learning about letting go, how to do it without my clothes scratching the surfaces. I've been learning about wasting time, closing some doors, hoping to open more down the line. I knew from miles away that I would detonate. I tried some magic tricks to skip my fate.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and we've just listened to Letting Go by Angie McMahon. And up next, we're going to be speaking to Lisa Palmer, the CEO of Wildlife Victoria and also a dedicated volunteer wildlife rescuer. And Lisa joins us in the studio today, which is extra special. And we're going to be discussing how Victoria's recent heat waves are affecting the state's wildlife. And specifically, we're going to focus on grey-headed flying foxes and their vulnerability to heat and the work that Wildlife Victoria is doing to protect them. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us on Tuesday Breakfast this morning, Lisa.
Thanks, Juliet. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. Well, to start off, Lisa, for those who don't know, could you tell us a little bit about who Wildlife Victoria is and the work that you do?
Sure. Wildlife Victoria is a charity, and since 1989, we've provided the state of Victoria with a 24/7 wildlife emergency response service. So what that means is anyone out there, any listeners or whoever actually that comes across sick, injured and orphaned wildlife can give us a call. One of our emergency response operators will triage the call and in most instances send a trained wildlife rescue volunteer to respond. So doesn't matter whether it's Christmas Day, 2 a.m. in the morning or now, we're 24/7.
Yeah, wow. And so you must have volunteers all across the state then?
We sure do. We've got about 1,400 volunteers right across the state in the most remote reaches of the state as well, which wonderful people and very highly skilled and doing a great job out there day after day helping our wildlife.
Yeah, that's such important work. And I guess it almost sounds like kind of paramedics, but volunteers, yeah, out there supporting the community when it comes to, yeah, helping injured wildlife. And, yeah, I know that the last few weeks, we've definitely been facing some of the worst heat waves that we've had in years, which has been, yeah, I think having such a big impact on the community across the board. I know that Wildlife Victoria, Lisa's been very busy, sort of on the front lines dealing with the impact on wildlife. But, yeah, could you maybe speak kind of, big picture about what these heat waves mean for our native wildlife? Yeah.
So the month of January has been absolutely horrific for our wildlife. So we had very extreme temperatures at the start of the month and most recently a 7-day prolonged heat wave in northern Victoria and across the west of the state. But also we've had bushfires and really severe bushfires. So our poor wildlife have been out there battling fire and heat. We've been triaging calls from members of the public for wildlife they've encountered burnt, sadly, after the bushfires, mostly koalas and kangaroos. And also we've lost thousands of grey-headed flying foxes, a threatened species due to heat stress. But on top of that, we experienced the busiest day in our history since 1989 at the start of January, where we took 1,135 calls for help from the public seeking support and assistance for heat and bushfire affected wildlife. So it's been an awful month for our wildlife, but also very challenging for us supporting them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, so many of us, I think, would already be aware of a lot of the devastating impacts of bushfires, especially. I think myself maybe a bit ignorantly hadn't thought that much about how wildlife would be affected by these kind of heat waves. And you touched on the grey-headed flying foxes. Could you tell us a bit more about their vulnerability to heat and what Wildlife Victoria has been doing to protect them?
Yeah, sure. So grey-headed flying foxes, first of all, are a threatened species and they're incredibly important to our ecosystem. So they are our only long-range pollinators. They are critical to the health of our eucalypt forests, so if they go, we're in big trouble. Sadly, they do not cope with heat. So they've got a physiological limit of around 42 degrees. So once the temperature gets there, they're in really big trouble. But from 38 degrees onwards, they start suffering heat stress. And what we see in the species is heat stress so severe that they end up suffering organ failure, death, and mass casualties. And important little animals, incredibly intelligent little animals. I refer to them as flying Labradors because they're super cute. They only have one young a year. This time of year, there's a lot of vulnerable juveniles out there in the heat. So important species, but suffer horrifically from heat stress. So the types of temperatures we've had in January have been fatal for thousands of them.
Yeah, that's really awful. And, I think just so sad to think about these species who are doing so much as well for the ecosystem that they're under such threat with these kind of temperatures. And what have been some of the steps that your Wildlife Victoria volunteers and staff as well have been doing to protect them at the moment?
So the good news is that we can save their lives, and the way to save their lives really is to cool them down and lower the ambient temperature. So the good news in Victoria now is our largest flying fox camps, including the one at Yarrabend in Kew, have sprinkler infrastructure in place. So once the temperature gets hot, the sprinkler infrastructure goes on, but it sprays a very, very light cooling mist right across the tree canopy. And I have been there in field when that system's been switched on and observed the bats flying in and almost doing cartwheels amongst the mist. So that's good, but we've just come back from a 7-day deployment up in Tatura and Yumurka, where we had 7 days in excess of 40 degrees. So the Wildlife Victoria team, including our vets, vet nurses, some of our operations staff, also local volunteers and local council, have all been out in field, effectively misting the animals by hand, grueling work in extreme heat. And very pleased to say we lost probably around 100 lives. Excuse me, losing my voice.
That's all good, yeah.
But save those colonies, which was great to see.
Really interesting as well to learn about, what the mechanics of actually protecting them are. I think I'd thought about wrapping them in little cold towels, but, misting sounds a lot more effective. That's really great that you were able to save the lives of so many of those flying foxes and, it sounds like, as you said, really grueling work up there in the heat, but so important. Looking forward to the rest of the summer, will these efforts be continuing, and kind of how do you deploy your teams? I'm assuming it's all weather dependent.
Yeah, it is weather dependent, and we're really hoping that this is it, but the forecast is not looking great this summer. So we knew that we'd have a cool lead up to Christmas, which is what happened in December, but there is still scope for it to be very, very hot. And if it is, we will need to go back out in field again to support them. And what we saw in our 7-day deployment, the bats get very stressed, heat stressed and fatigued over multiple days. So while they can be okay just with one day of extreme heat, when you've got 7 days in a row, you go out in field and observe the animals getting quieter and quieter and more fatigued, not dissimilarly to us humans probably, if we're outside in that heat for such a long period of time. So we will have to go out again if we experience temperatures like that. Yeah. So we live and die by the weather forecast at Wildlife Victoria, I can tell you, but we'll wait and see what happens.
Let's hope that there isn't quite as intense of a heat wave as we've seen so far this summer. And to wrap up, Lisa, would you be able to point us to maybe some places online that our listeners can go to find out more about Wildlife Victoria and support your work?
Yeah, great. So the best place to go is our website, which is wildlifevictoria.org.au. We've got quite a lot of information on there, including fact sheets, including how to recognise heat stress wildlife, our phone number to pop in your phone if you ever need help with wildlife. And we also have an urgent summer appeal, fundraising appeal in place at the moment if people would like to donate to support our work.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Lisa. And I think, really enlightening for us to know, kind of what the impacts on the ground or up in the trees actually are of these really intense heat waves that we've been experiencing. We've been speaking to Lisa from Wildlife Victoria about the risks posed by recent heat waves to vulnerable species, including the grey-headed flying foxes, and you can find out more at their website, www.wildlifevictoria.org.au, or visit at Wildlife Victoria on Instagram and Facebook. And up next, we're going to listen to some community service announcements. We'll be back soon.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a container deposit scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme. The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass, or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Because the Palestinian fight isn't just the Palestinians' fight, it's all our fight, because it's a fight not just about land, it's about a fight for freedom.
Everybody should be standing here today saying, Free Palestine.
Solidarity with our Palestinian brothers and sisters on behalf of the Gumbanja Nation, my people who've never ceded their sovereignty.
We should be recognising Palestine as a state and recognising the rights of Palestinians.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
You're listening to 3CR, and up next we're going to be speaking to Gail Osborne, a member of Wombat Forest Care, a community group dedicated to protecting forests and wildlife in the Wombat Forest and surrounding area. And Gail spoke to us last July to discuss the government's undelivered promise to create a national park in the region and the impact that planned burns have on vulnerable species. And today, Gail joins us to discuss what's next for Wombat Forest Care in 2026, including changes to federal strategic assessment processes, which will impact states and what that's going to mean for threatened species. But thanks for joining us on 3CR, Gail. How are you going this morning, Gail? We're just going to play a very quick announcement and we'll be back in a few seconds.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts.
Hi, and we're going to be speaking to Gail now. How are you going this morning?
Very well. And now we're celebrating the fact that we've got a national park here.
Oh, that's so exciting. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, so we launched our campaign for park status back in 2010. Mm-hmm. So after 15 years, we're actually getting the national park. The legislation went through last year. And we're actually going to get three new national parks. So part of the Wombat, which is a state forest, is being joined to the Lüderdürk State Park, which is already under the National Parks Act. So we'll have a new Wombat-Lüderdürk National Park, which will protect the high conservation values of sections of the Wombat. Mm. And then we still need to get, there's about 20,000 hectares of regional parks to be, they don't need to be legislated. I think it's a procedure within the department. But we also got over at Mount Cole, the Mount Buanga State Park has been extended to take part of Mount Cole, and that's going to be a new national park. And there'll also be a new Pyrenees National Park over near Revoca. So quite a celebration. For the locals, we mainly concentrate on the Wombat. I think it's gone over a lot of people's heads that we actually got 3 national parks.
Yeah, no, that's such exciting news. And, I actually very recently went to not quite Mount Buanga, but, like, quite close to there. So that's really exciting to have, not just one, but 3 new national parks announced. And I think we've got to take these moments, Gail, to celebrate the really good news.
Yes, well, we did. We had a celebration.
Fantastic.
In December, yes. So we only about 70 people managed, 70, 80 people managed to get there just because before Christmas. But then we didn't want to push it in the celebration into this year. So we went ahead. And, you know, there were some grown men with tears in their eyes. There were people there who'd protested the logging back in the early 2000s, you know, 1998. And for them to see that we're actually getting these protections, it was very special. So it's very, very special.
Yeah, definitely. And, amazing to have that kind of long-term community advocacy and activism, and for those people to get to see, you know, the fruits of their labour and efforts, come to this massive success. And, now that there will be the national park, what will that mean for, the species and that ecosystem?
Well, it'll mean a lot in terms of protection. So Well, it's still a long process. The park still has to be gazetted. It takes about 6 months to hand everything over. So it doesn't just happen. And there needs to be a management plan. There'll be signage. You know, it's really slow. Frustratingly slow, really. You know, you think, oh, you've got this. But I think the main thing is it'll be managed by people who care. And so at the moment, as you know, we're still having this incredible salvage, like timber is coming out of the Wombat Forest, despite the fact it should be managed as a national park, even though it's, you know, all the processes haven't happened. So we've had people, our chief fire officer, he's just been seconded somewhere else, but he came over from Vic Forest. So they view the forest entirely in an entirely different way.
They do, thinking about what resources they can take from it rather than, you know, protecting the habitat that's already there.
And, so I was in a meeting with someone senior in the department, and she said, so why did you want a national park? And I'm going,
oh, my goodness.
And we were walking out of a salvaged area. And it was obvious that I saw it in a completely different way than she saw it. I saw all this destruction.
She went,
that's all right, you know, like there's a bit of stuff on the ground, so it's okay. So, you know, so we can't wait to have staff here who actually care.
And if you go to
the Lurdudu State Park, you know, that's been run for years, beautifully run, and barely a weed, and they do feral animal control and all those things that don't happen in the Wombat. So
Well, hopefully, with the change to make it a national park, it'll lead to a lot of positive changes and a much brighter future moving forward.
Yes, but in the Wombat, so we have this. Well, it's all through the state.
Yep.
The department do these planned burns on the basis that it'll be. It'll make us safer if there's a bigger fire, which there's a lot of opposing thought on that, including from Professor David Lindemeyer. So we're coming up to this process, which is called a strategic assessment. So there's, throughout Victoria, we have species that are endangered under the Commonwealth, so the EPB Sea Act, we have these endangered species. And there are processes in place to protect the species, and anyone who's carrying out any action, whether it's the department with their burns or it's a developer clearing land, if you've got these listed threatened species, you need to report yourself to the EPBC, to the Federal Environment Office. And it appears that the department here, DECA, have not been reporting themselves when they carry out planned burns or strategic fire breaks. And where those burns affect endangered species, listed endangered species. So now there's a process coming up so that every single burn doesn't have to go through the process. There will be an overriding process. And we're just a bit worried that this could be a pathway to reducing protections for threatened species. So, you know, as we saw under the logging with the regional forest agreements, there was an exemption for federally listed species and the states were meant to look after them. And we all saw that didn't happen, you know, with greater gliders in logging coops and a whole lot of species were decimated.
Mm.
And so we're very worried about this, you know, a single blanket approval to fast-track the approvals system. So that's all happening at the moment. There's the terms of reference. And so it seems that even though we get the national park or things, there's always some other battle coming up, always something else. That's where we're at the moment. We've got to try and get the regional parks gazetted and a whole lot of other bits of public land over at Mount Cole. It'll be the little state forests that will become bushland reserves. So there's that. Just push. We just need to keep pushing to make sure it happens and doesn't just slide away.
Yeah. I think it really, kind of speaks to the need to be vigilant and, you know, continue to pay attention to, you know, what is actually going on. And, you know, though there's a new national park, the three national parks that have been created, you do still need to pay attention to what's going on otherwise. And, it does sound like with the federal strategic assessment processes that, there are some loopholes there and some areas, sort of there's room to for the species to still be at threat. But Gail, before we wrap up, would you be able to point to a few places where 3CR listeners can go for support?
I think people should join organisations like the Victorian National Parks Association. The only way we got these national parks was working in partnership with the VMPA. So they do an amazing job, and it's throughout the state. And the other one I think that's, you know, it's quite dear to my heart is the campaign for the Great Forest National Park, you know, where we've got the government saying they're not going to create any more national parks. And this, you know, it's so obvious. If we don't have, so there's the end of native forest logging in Victoria, and unless we create these national parks, and then we can always have a return to native forest logging. It won't go away. So while so much of the public land remains a state forest, the state forests are there to be managed for their resources, so for logging and mining. So until we get these forests protected in national parks, so I think that, you know, if people can throw themselves into these campaigns for protection wherever they're living, it's if every little bit counts.
It really does.
Every person who helps campaign or joins the VMPA, keeps themselves informed, writes their letters, all those sorts of things, it adds up.
It really does. Yeah, it's very powerful. And I think, you know, it really speaks. And I think, you know, looking at the example of the three national parks that have come up around Wombat Forest, it really shows the power of community and what you can achieve when you work together. So, yeah, once again, congratulations on that exciting news.
Thank you.
Yeah. But thank
you. And thanks for the opportunity to chat.
Of course, of course. No, we really appreciate you coming back on today, Gail. And, yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, we've been speaking to Gail from Wombat Forest Care, a community group dedicated to protecting Wombat Forest in central Victoria. And we spoke about the three new national parks that are being created in and around Wombat Forest, which is very exciting, but also about how federal changes to planned burn assessment processes could impact threatened species. You can get involved at Wombat Online on Facebook or email info@wombatforestcare.org.au. And also, Gail suggested looking at the Victorian National Parks Association. Yep. And I think up next, Elena is going to be playing a short CSA, and then we'll be back with our final interview for today.
DigiChew, people, place, language. Connecting stories, culture and language across Australia. Contribute your content in digitube.com.au. Sign up for a free account and select your options for streaming, download and broadcast promotion.
A 3CR supporter.
The fixed site Victorian Pill Testing Service opened its doors in Fitzroy on August 21st, 2025. This morning, we are speaking to Sarah from the VPTS about what the service is and the importance of drug checking within our communities. We will also be discussing the accessibility of the VPTS at the Victoria Street Pride Party set to be held this coming Sunday. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining us on the show. Could you explain to our listeners a little bit about what the Victorian Pill Testing Service does?
Yes, well, essentially we're a fixed site and a mobile service. It's an 18-month trial that the government has funded. And essentially what we do is people bring their drug samples to us and we test them in a lab and provide those results along with tailored harm reduction advice. It's a completely confidential and anonymous service, and it ensures harm reduction is front and foremost of the setting.
Yeah, that's a really great service to have within our community, but can you explain why drug checking is so important?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we know people take drugs even though prohibition is in place, and over time, the drug market has become more and more unstable and more risky. So really what we want to be doing here is reducing the harms that the drugs may cause and provide appropriate and useful harm reduction advice. So what we find is about 15% of all our samples have an unexpected psychoactive substance in them, and we can give that information straight back to the person along with tailored harm reduction advice.
Yeah, I guess especially around this season, around this time, can't stop people from taking drugs, but telling them what's in them is really important. And how does this harm reduction approach differ from the traditional methods of overdose prevention?
Well, overdose prevention obviously in and of itself is harm reduction, but it's harm reduction when harm is already being caused. Someone is having an overdose. So the beauty of a pill testing or drug checking service is that most often it provides harm reduction advice and intervention before someone's used the substance, so it's trying to reduce the harm before it's even occurred.
Yeah, I guess it's important to kind of prevent these things before they get to a point where you can't anymore. And this is a way where people can have more information about what they're putting in their bodies and what to do. I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we find that, you know, many people make a different decision to what they'd intended to do once they hear that, the results and that advice. You know, at festivals, we saw that, you know, 30% of people said they were going to take less, or people will choose not to take a substance when they find there's something in there that's unexpected. So it really does. It's at a coalface of being able to have behavior change
and to reduce those harms.
Yeah, and then it can lead people to make a more informed decision about what they might be choosing to do if they can know what is inside these drugs that they may be taking.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so you guys will be set up at the Victoria Street Pride Party on Sunday. Where can attendees find you?
Yes, and we're super excited to be at the Victoria Street Pride Party. Obviously, it's part of our 18-month trial where we're trying out a number of different settings, but we will be located at on Oxford Street near the Peel Street Park. And we'll be operating from 1 till 7 p.m. So we really encourage people to come down and get their samples tested. Alternatively, if you don't want to come and see us at the party, we are open at our fixed site, which is 95 Brunswick Street, on Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays. And you can find our operating hours on our website or on our social media accounts.
And can you explain a little bit about what the process might be if somebody does come to your fixed site or to the mobile site at the party? What is the process of getting a sample tested?
Absolutely, I can talk about that. So look, first of all, it's an anonymous and confidential service, and we're not going to take any information that identifies someone personally. We do ask questions, but the person has absolute control and choice on what questions they choose to answer and what questions they might not want to. And we will still test someone's sample no matter what questions they answer. But when they arrive, it's usually a discreet entrance. Look for the purple door if you come into the fixed site, but a discreet entrance which is fenced off at the event. When they arrive, they complete some demographics and complete a disclaimer form, and then drop their samples off to our scientists, who ask a few questions about those samples. Testing can take as short as 15 minutes, but if it's a more complicated sample, we will run it through some extra machines, and that might take a bit longer, but we make sure we keep people updated with wait time. And then someone will meet with one of our harm reduction team. They're made up of healthcare workers and peer workers, and we'll provide the results back to that person, along with any harm reduction advice they may want to receive, and we can make referrals onto other services if that's what someone wants. Overall, the visit's about half an hour, and if you come to the fixed site, we've got tea and coffee while you wait. If you come to the festival, it's a little bit more noisy, but we really hope people feel comfortable to come and visit us.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really important. A service that can then help people to make informed decisions and to keep people safe and avoid the tragedies that can happen with unknown substances within drugs that you're taking. Where can people find more information on harm reduction and pill testing?
Well, if you want to find more information about our service and its operations, you can head to our website. That's probably got the most comprehensive information. That's vicpilltesting.org.au. You can read how it works at the fixed site and at the mobile services. You can also find reports of all the drugs we've tested and what we found, along with any notifications we've pushed out when we've found something that might be potentially harmful or dangerous. So that's probably the most comprehensive place for information, but you can also follow us on our socials, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing this information. I think this is a really important service and people should know about it and feel comfortable to come and use the Victorian Pill Testing Service. I know it can sound like a scary thing, but it should be accessible and it's completely anonymous. So there should be no worries about any of that. And thank you so much for telling me all about it today.
Thank you very much for having me.
We've been speaking to Sarah from the Victorian Pill Testing Service about what pill testing really is and how important it is to overdose prevention. The VPTS will be set up at the Victoria Street Pride Party occurring this Sunday, February 8th. For more information, please visit their website at vicpilltesting.org.au.
And yeah, finally, our events calendar for the upcoming week. So tonight at 5:30 p.m., there's going to be the We Got to Fight for Our Right to Protest protest, I guess, taking place at the State Parliament, and that's being organised by the Defend Dissent Coalition. On the 5th of February, so that's this coming Thursday from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at Unassigned Gallery in Brunswick, there's going to be screenings of Palestinian short films and a panel discussion, with Palestinian Tatris artists. And that event is called Textures of the Land. And also at Unassigned Gallery on this Sunday, the 8th of February, the Handmade in Palestine Market will be taking place at 12 p.m. And both of those events are taking place at 55 Edward Street in Brunswick. And then also on Sunday at 8 p.m, there's an event, Rage Against Racism at the Tote, which is a music event featuring music amplifying minority voices of colour against systemic oppression. So plenty happening this week to get involved with. Before we wrap up, we might sort of go through the interviews we did today. So starting at 7:15, we played a speech from the Invasion Day rally in Geelong, which was organised by Be True Cry Justice Geelong. And we heard from Lena Hokianga Poaka, who was born and raised in Nyati Ka Hunguru, which is the third largest tribe on the east coast of the North Island of Aotearoa, or New Zealand. In her speech, Lena spoke about her advocacy for Maori and Indigenous rights, truth and justice, drew some comparisons between advocacy here in so-called Australia and also over in Aotearoa. And then at 7:30, Fung spoke to Lucinda Thorpe, privacy campaigner at Digital Rights Watch. And this morning they spoke about Palantir, which is a defence contractor specialising in data integration and service analytics, who has customers such as the Israeli Occupation Forces and the US Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, as well as supporting government and corporate clients here in Australia. And then at 7:15, we spoke to Lisa Palmer, the CEO of Wildlife Victoria and a dedicated volunteer wildlife rescuer. And Lisa joined us in the studio and discussed how Victoria's recent heat waves have been affecting wildlife. And we specifically focused on the grey-headed flying foxes. And Lisa was recently up in central Victoria participating in protection efforts, misting those flying foxes to keep their bodies cool during the heat wave. And then at 8 o'clock, we spoke to Gail Osborne, a member of Wombat Forest Care, which is a community group dedicated to protecting the Wombat Forest and its wildlife. And Gail spoke to us about the recent creation of three new national parks in the area, which is really exciting news, as well as what's next for Wombat Forest Care in 2026, including what changes to federal strategic assessment processes when it comes to planned burns, and what impact that's going to have on threatened species. And then finally, at 8:15, Elena spoke to the Victorian Pill Testing Service, which opened its doors in Fitzroy just last August. And we spoke to Sarah from the VPTS about what this service is and the importance of drug checking within our community, specifically focused on the accessibility of the VPTS at the upcoming Victoria's Pride Party, which will be on Smith Street, so just outside 3CR, and that'll be on this weekend. So yeah, thank you all for joining us for a super packed show this morning, and this has been Tuesday Breakfast on the 3rd of February, and we appreciate everyone tuning in. And up next will be Accent of Women, and yeah, stay tuned for their fantastic show next.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.